science is interesting, and if you don't agree, you can fuck off.
So, Marcus, you're with us this week because we are essentially making the call to have alternating hosts, essentially.
Yeah.
You and Ellen at this point, and perhaps more people in the future, perhaps, which is exciting.
Others. Yeah. Lovely. I'm glad to be back.
Good to see you. And, yes, let's get into it. So the IPCC report, this has been out for a couple of weeks, right, but we haven't really gone into this on Dear Science, so this is good.
Yeah, so it's a week or two ago, they had a big conference and argued a lot and came back with some conclusions, and they basically said that unless we do something now, as in right away, there is very little chance of keeping global temperature rises below 1.5 degrees C.
Which means?
Which means we're all screwed, basically.
By 2040.
Well, so unless something is done in the next 10 years or so, which is effectively now, because it takes a lot of time to make these changes, then we're heading towards a 2 or 3 degree rise in temperatures.
And when you say we're all screwed, what does screwed look like?
Okay, so there's a bunch of things that could happen. Sort of one of the earliest things, which is already happening, is the Arctic ice cap can melt. That's the North Pole. Mm-hmm. And it's already dropped by about 40% over the last 20, 25 years.
That's massive.
Which is pretty big, yeah. And so that, obviously, that puts in a lot of water into the sea, which causes a little bit of sea rise, not too much. The Greenland ice sort of sheet will also start melting as well. But the big deal with that is that ice reflects a lot of light, yeah? And so you've got the North Pole and all of these ice caps reflecting light back into space rather than being absorbed and heating up the atmosphere even more. So the more the ice caps go, the more it's going to amplify the heating.
Protection
so everything
we
goes,
have.
Yeah, so everything goes faster and faster. Also, you know, species that live near the North Pole are going to be under threat. So polar bears, you can probably your grandchildren may not see a polar bear again in the wild.
And then that sea level rise will affect.
And the sea level rise,
the
Arctic sea level rise is not going to be, you know, it's virtually unnoticeable. It's nothing like if the Antarctic, you know, ice sheet went away.
But there is rising sea level people are being affected by it.
Yeah, so certainly
especially in the Pacific.
In the Pacific Island nations, the Maldives and other places as well, they are in trouble. And there's a sort of question, can you be a nation if you don't actually have any land anymore in your country? So this could directly affect New Zealand, Australia, because all of these peoples are going to be coming over to probably this part of the world. Mm. And, you know, how can they have, you know, will they rent land from New Zealand or Australia to you know, have their own country or, you know, incorporate themselves into
how do we
country.
Work that out sort of thing.
Yeah, and so there's various scenarios. So if we have, you know, I'm a very pessimistic that, you know, we're going to be able to do anything to slow this down.
Mm-hmm.
Because there isn't a political will. We're talking about four or five, each country devoting 4 or 5% of GDP to changing how we, you know, emit greenhouse gases and things like that. And you know, when the biggest economy in the world has a leader who says that the scientists are just motivated by political considerations and that, you know, they don't really, he doesn't really believe in climate change and things like that, or at least man-made climate change, then, you know, the chances of actually anything happening seems to be
It seems very backwards
small.
To say that the scientists are in it for political
yeah,
gain.
Yeah, this is the politician saying the scientists are political.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, so let's say there's a 2% rise, you're going to have a lot of drought conditions across, you know, around the planet. In Africa, crop yields drop by about 10%. 40 to 60 million people exposed to malaria in Africa. 10 million more people globally affected by flooding. A whole lot, the polar bear and caribou in the Arctic become endangered or extinct. If it goes to 3%, you get serious droughts every year in Europe. 1 to 4 billion more people suffering from water shortages. That's billion, not million, which is incredible. Another up to 500 million people are at risk of starvation. I mean, these are pretty major things.
This is dire. And I mean, this drought and the water shortages, I mean, those things are happening now. And if we're looking at those actually just getting worse and affecting more and more people, this is basically what we're looking at is the end of the world as we know it. Would that be in
some places,
correct?
Yeah. So climate's going to change more in some places than others. So in New Zealand, it's going to get warmer. So expect sort of an average about 2 to 3 degrees warmer. It's going to get a lot wetter in some areas. It's going to get a lot drier in other areas. So the North Island is predicted to actually get drier. There's going to be less precipitation. The South Island is going to get a lot wetter. And so, you know, it's difficult to predict how agriculture is going to be affected and in this country as well. So there's not going to be starvation in New Zealand, but there's going to be a lot of, you know, economic difficulties.
I guess the fact that some countries are going to be more affected than others might prevent the ones, what might make it feel for the countries that are going to be less affected, like there's less of an urgency and make them less willing to take actions.
Yeah, and then that comes, that discussion of international responsibility, I suppose, and being good humans on a global scale, that kind of comes into it. And does that kind of relate to the idea of political will that you were talking about?
Yeah.
Or the lack thereof?
And what sign do you see that we can be united globally and be good, you know, Earth citizens?
It was interesting because when the Paris Agreement came, everyone was sort of patting themselves on the back saying, yay, you know, we've finally agreed, pretty much all of us, to do something. And then pretty quickly after that, it kind of unraveled with obviously the states leaving the agreement, but also just countries sort of, I don't know if it was deciding or realizing that they had made a commitment that they were actually not really willing to fulfill or not able to fulfill. And it's, I mean, like after Copenhagen, we waited 10 years pretty much before we had this agreement. 10 years they were wasted just kind of, you know, effing around. And it didn't actually change. Like, we were like, oh, great, we've got this great agreement, but it's not really changing anything either. So I just don't really see what can change anything.
So, I guess now we because we have this very dire information, which has probably been available or at least talked about for a while, I'm sure that people were aware of this, but do you think the more that we communicate, you know, this number 2040, which is not so far in the future, and possibly, you know, those dire effects will happen earlier than that, and people are being affected now, so actually that number 2040 is not a reality for some people, the more we talk about that and the more that we talk about other issues, because now it's all related, right? Everything that we do needs to be considered in regards to the climate, perhaps. Yeah. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely it does. I mean, we can all do things to, you know, to benefit the climate. You know, we can take public transport. We can, you know, drive electric cars, take trains, use video conferencing instead of going on business trips and things like that. But the countries with the power to do something, I think, tend to be the countries that are going to be affected less than some of the places where there's going to be really dire effects.
Well,
you know, the starvation things.
Well said.
And if you need, if more motivation is needed, there's two, especially, you know, this affects a lot of places, but there's two issues that have been highlighted in Nature recently. They said that extreme drought could decrease barley yields and result in global beer shortages, which is a major issue. And also chocolate is under threat. So there may be more rain, but the climate will become more unpredictable. So the cacao growing will be also at risk.
Well,
so chocolate and beer.
Chocolate and beer.
And that is the ultimate motivator.
And but also, and when you do put it into perspective like that, when it actually starts to affect people's daily lives, right? Maybe, yeah, I mean,
more so than.
But I still feel
polar
like
polar bear doesn't do it. Maybe beer will.
But
right.
I feel like, is Trump going to care though? If he can still probably access beer and chocolate.
Well, Trump,
I'm just
Trump
putting
doesn't
it
drink,
up.
so
oh,
I don't know.
I thought that was going to be the saving grace.
What? I didn't know that.
No, I feel like I should. Teetotal.
What? Okay. Yeah. Well, this has put me on the back foot, hasn't it? But again, beer and chocolate, you're right, big things. But also, if we just think about it as, you know, food, water, all of those things that we need to live.
Absolutely.
Okay, moving on to DNA testing.
Yeah, so...
is this good, bad?
This is good, bad, dangerous, worrying, maybe, but it's something worth considering. So early this year, the police in America managed to track down a serial killer called the Golden State Killer, and he was responsible, it turns out, for 12 murders, 51 rapes, and over 120 burglaries. So this is a pretty nasty guy, and he'd been on the run, or he'd been looked for by the police for many, many years, decades, I think. And he was actually caught because people in his distant family, not even his brothers and sisters, and, you know, cousins several times removed, had shared their genetic information to companies like 23andMe and Ancestry.com and other places.
What? Okay, so this person didn't do the test themselves, but
no.
A distant family member did the test, and therefore that DNA existed on some kind of database and was able to be accessed by police.
So the police got a warrant, I guess, to search these databases. They compared, you know, searched through all the DNA that these companies had, compared it to crime scene DNA, and finally got a hit. And obviously the hit wasn't the killer,
wasn't the serial killer,
but it was a relative of the serial killer.
So then how did they find...
So there's a study published in Science just recently that found that estimated 60% of the U.S. population with European heritage, so the U.S. population with European heritage, could be identified in a similar way, even if they haven't ever joined one of these genetic databases themselves, if they haven't shared their own data.
So what is the issue here around privacy? Because, you know, you might have some people being like, well, this is a good thing because then we can find the bad guys. What is the issue around, and because this goes back, I guess, to also, you know, when NSA was looking into people's information and data collecting and those sorts of things, when you haven't specifically given your permission, but their kind of way of spinning it is that, well, if you haven't done anything wrong, you don't need to be worried, right?
Right, and so for this sort of situation, that's fine. I want all serial killers behind bars, obviously. Right. But... you know, the police were able to get hold of these databases and search them. What if an insurance company could get hold of these databases and search them and discover that your family has an illness that make you more likely to get that illness,
right,
which may up your, you know,
your
premiums, yeah?
And then in other instances could also be used for bias.
Right, exactly.
Right,
and
okay.
You can think of many situations like that. Yeah. So there's a big privacy issue. Now, these companies say they will never, you know, these databases are closed and private, and they will only release this information if they have a warrant, you know, if they're ordered to, all right?
But
we've heard this before. Information gets hacked, you know, credit card numbers get released regularly, it seems. And so, you know, how much confidence do we really have?
Even in this instance, I mean, it makes me very uneasy even in the instance of a police warrant where it's like, it's completely unrelated. People, like, at the moment, the police can only get your DNA if you basically give it to them or if they find it on a crime scene, I guess. But now, I find that disturbing that they can just go to companies and be like, hey, can we access all of your information so that people gave you in confidence that it wouldn't be.
And that it's not necessarily you, it's somebody related to you, that it's not even that direct.
Right. So right now it's a case of government and policies catching up with technology. So there aren't strong privacy laws to keep police from searching these sites. You know, how this data should be treated and kept private and things like that. So that's a case of you know, policy catching up
exactly, which I presume will be happening. But
and there's a lot of people, especially in countries like New Zealand, Australia, the US, that don't have histories that stretch back hundreds and hundreds and thousands of years or whatever, people want to know where they come from. Yeah, so, you know, most people in New Zealand, you know, are just a few generations away from the people who came here to begin with. Yeah, and even Maori people in New Zealand have only been here less than a millennia. Yeah, a few hundred years. So people want to know. Okay, am I European descent? Am I Russian? Am I African? Am I Polynesian or whatever? And you know, where does this come from? So there's a lot of curiosity, and so people are interested in that.
Yeah.
And so they freely give out this data.
It's a great market.
But it's, what are they actually giving out?
Yeah. Oh, you see ads for it on social media all the time. I find that a bit scary.
Yeah.
I don't think that's how I want to know.
Okay. Excuse me. Shall we leave that one there?
Yes.
But I guess just room to think before perhaps agreeing to that. Tess, still intrigues me too, I'll be honest.
Oh, it is. I mean, I want to know where I'm from, you know? It is.
So, final story. I will put this out there, though. Like you said, this concept of wanting to know where you come from implies that you don't already know, right? So there's...
Yes.
It would generally, perhaps here in New Zealand, be more Pākehā people as opposed to Māori people, perhaps.
Absolutely, yeah. And the question is, do you own your own genetic information? Who owns that? Who owns that information?
Is it the company that you...
Is it the company that you pay to do the testing?
Because that's super problematic.
Right.
I would absolutely disagree to... Yeah, it's your... And Te Ao Māori, you consider it your whakapapa. That's not for a company to own necessarily.
But they do, it seems, at the moment.
Once you give up.
There's not strong sort of regulation about it.
You don't have the right to refuse it from the police, essentially.
And that's how they make the money.
We're going off on tangent. Right. Last one, quick little story about a big explosion in a lab.
Biggish, smallish. Somewhat big. So two serious stories in this, a little bit of fun. So magnetism, we've all sort of know what that is. You know, you've all seen magnets and played with magnets and things like that. So the magnet you have on your table or your fridge magnet or something like that is not particularly strong, although it's still thousands of times stronger than the magnetic field of this planet, you know, that we use to navigate by. But early this year, researchers in Tokyo decided that they were going to create an extremely strong magnetic field, and there's reasons for that, and I'll explain that in a sec. But they accidentally created a magnetic field that was quite a lot stronger than they expected and managed to blow the doors off their lab as a result. And there's a video online. I don't know if we can put a link up, but they meant to make a field. And the unit for magnetic field is the Tesla. This is like the car company. And they tried for 700 Teslas, which doesn't sound a lot, but it's actually giant. And they actually managed to make 1,200 Teslas. And that is about 50 million times more intense than the magnetic field around on this planet that we experience all the time.
So why is it that they wanted to?
So they wanted to do it because making short but very, very strong magnetic fields is actually really important when we are developing new energy sources like fusion. Fusion energy is this sort of, it's always 25 years in the future, it seems, but it's this very technologically difficult thing, but it could provide basically unlimited energy. So there's the link with the first story, you know, carbon free, all of that sort of stuff. And so they need this technology, but they sort of overestimated or underestimated the amount of field that they would create. Not the biggest ever. It's the strongest ever field generated in indoors in a controlled environment. But some crazy Russians did more than twice as much in about 2000. I don't know what happened to them. Whether they lived to tell the tale, I don't know. But.
Explosions.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
One way to wrap that up. Somebody also just actually a couple of texts. Somebody said Utopia season 2 episode 6 opening scene. Type that in and watch. I presume it's about the DNA testing, which we could maybe do in the break. Also, somebody said, I don't mean to be paranoid, but imagine if a future Nazi or white supremacist party gained real power and had access to this information. Leave everybody on that note.
That was Dear Science.